The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Alaska was a place I had been fascinated with since I was young. My parents were watching a movie, and my eyes got so big when I saw the Northern Lights. I think it's even my first memory. Those shimmering blue and green lights that seemed extraterrestrial. Apparently, I would shout, "Twinkle, twinkle," at my parents until they put the movie on. I can never remember what movie it was. Back home, the roof of my childhood bedroom was painted to replicate the Northern Lights above me. Dad even taped green and blue fairy lights to the ceiling for me to act as nightlights. Maybe fascinated wasn't the right word. Obsessed. The way a child will find one thing and cling onto it for dear life. Whether it's stuffed animals or a blanket, if you lose it, you lose that safety you associated with it. Growing up, I kept my love for the place alive and well, extending it beyond just the lights I had known. Never thought it was a place I'd ever actually find myself. It seemed like some distant world far beyond my galaxy. A pipe dream at best. But time marches on and you get older. You start realizing there's less and less holding you back. You give yourself these allowances, things you tell yourself to keep you from going out of your comfort zone. Sometimes, though, there will be an event that washes over that allowance like battery acid, and suddenly, you're left without excuses. Either you do it, or you don't, and you have to accept that if you miss out on something you wanted your whole life, it's entirely your fault. Battery acid. That's what it tasted like. The feeling of carpet against my fingernails, the scratching sensation rubbing against my cheek. I could have sworn I laid on that floor for a lifetime. Perhaps it was because at that moment I felt like I had lost a life. My safety blanket was ripped away from me. Lying on the white carpet, small patches of red dirtying the purity of the white fibers around my face. I looked towards the ceiling, and as the sun dipped down, it cast a simmer through the window that danced above me. Pale embers played like fire, embers drifting above, a sky aflame. Just as the memory of the Northern Lights could have very well been an awakening of my consciousness. Laying there, watching another set of lights dance, a lifetime had passed, and I was ready to begin another. Slowly, I pulled myself together, sitting up and letting breath into my lungs, cleaning stains off the side of my face that also reminded me of fire. I worked hard. I was focused and methodical. Day after day, things got better, and though it wasn't easy, and though it hurt, I was able to move on. Eventually, when I looked at the vacation time I had earned at work, I noticed I had 2 weeks saved up. My time was about to reset when the year rolled over. It was a use-it-or-lose-it kind of deal. Sitting at my desk, palm in my hand, I wonder what I would do with such time. Maybe my thoughts would have gotten there organically, but it was the calendar pinned to the wall that ultimately decided. Looking over, I could see above the grid of dates, the blue and green I had known for so long. All my excuses I would have used left when he did. If I didn't take the plunge, it would have been all on me. I had the time, and I had the savings, so I booked it. An adorable cabin in a small vacation community in Alaska. Each day went by so fast, waiting for it. I had packed all my things. The house looked like I was prepared to move out. Clothing in boxes, all the food in the fridge was stuff I could quickly pack away and keep cool on the trip. Before I knew it, I was stuffing those boxes into my car and heading out, saying goodbye to my parents and taking one more look at my apartment. Seemed so empty without me in it. Even though I would return, it felt like the last time. I couldn't help but stare at the stains on the carpet. ones that no matter how hard I tried, how long I spent with tears rolling out of my eyes and scrubbing away, they would never come out. They were left behind. It was all a blur. I wanted to drive, as the cabins were only of a few places actually accessible by vehicle. I can't say I remember much of the drive. It was just peaceful, rolled through my head like nothing at all. It wasn't long before I arrived at the cabin. Tires long since clinging to snow, I pulled into a small, designated parking spot. There were a few empty cars already waiting for me. People who had likely arrived a few days before me. When I booked the place, I was lucky to even get it, as the other cabins had vacancy. One box after another was unloaded. I saw a kid playing around one of the cabins, maybe around the age I was when I saw that movie. He chased a ball around, kicking it and watching the snow roll off. It was as if no one ever told him how to make a proper snowman. Looking at the cabin, I could see an older woman waving at me as she sipped from a white coffee mug. I offered a smile back, watching my breath drift up. With all my boxes inside, I looked at the cabin next to mine. Another older individual, though he looks to be in about his late 40s, a life of hard work etched into the stern lines on his face. Somehow he had fallen asleep in the chair that was on every cabin's porch. I was excited to lay a blanket across my legs and watch the night sky, free of light pollution. Food was placed into the refrigerator, and clothing was shoved into drawers. I could already feel myself never wanting to leave. It was almost fate. The small, white, circular rug that sat ever so quaint in the living room. I had to take a few deep breaths to calm my nerves, reminding myself it was just no difference than the white snow outside. 2 weeks. I had 2 weeks away to rest and enjoy myself somewhere far from it all. I had gotten to know the people around me over the next few days. Told them about my life as they told me about theirs. Turned out I wasn't the only one looking for a new start. The man in his late 40s, Adam. He saw some action while in the armed forces. His fingers twitched like worms as he told stories. Kept it real PG for me, but I could see the R rating in his eyes. Said he came out to the cabin alone. The sounds of the city were too much for him. The older woman and boys. Ellis, a recent widow, was trying to find a way to live her life after her husband passed away. He was so much of her that she didn't know who she was by herself, and she figured the cabin was a nice place to discover it. She would tell me stories in between drags of a cigarette. The boy was Emery. Em for short. Em's parents weren't ideal. And while Ellis jumped around the subject, as Em's father was her son, I knew a victim when I saw one, though it wasn't my place to push. I didn't see much of the other three cabins. A woman around my age was in one of them, and saw her periodically come and go. She looked lonely, but like it was an internal loneliness. Not unhappy, just in the moment. Never really got her name. Should have approached her, I guess. I knew one cabin had a couple in it. Not because I ever saw them together, but because their voices would ring out in the middle of the night. Barely near civilization, and they found something to fight about. Seems like they were trying to rekindle a long-since-dead flame. Though I did get a smile on my face whenever I heard Adam's commanding voice rise above the storm, telling them to shut the hell up. Their voices would crinkle into nothing so quickly. Adam was practically their counselor. The sixth cabin, I saw her the least. If all of us were out there to try and achieve start over, I think she was out there to let her pass quietly. She was old, barely able to make it out to the porch. She seemed so sweet whenever we caught glances, though her fire was a waning one. A lot of us would interact and coexist, and I suddenly found myself wanting to never leave. It wasn't until the eighth day after my arrival that I heard a subtle knock at my door. I was in the middle of preparing for bed when the sound echoed through my cabin. Walking to the front, I pulled the wooden handle and was surprised to see Adam standing on my porch. It was fairly late, but without a word, he turned around and gestured to the sky. My heart knew what it was. I had seen glimpses of it, but nothing like this. Walking out onto the porch, I saw them. Like translucent worms, gallivanting in the sky. The bright blue and green lights nearly burned into my memories, were hanging perfectly above my head. All six of us stood outside, looking as if the cabin roofs were a picture frame. Even the older woman, with Adam's assistance, was able to bear witness to it. She would pass that night, quiet, guided by the northern lights above her. Can't even say I know what happens to her after that. People did come, and suddenly the lights of her cabin stopped turning on. The next 2 days were quiet and somber. I didn't see the others much, just sat inside the cabin sipping tea. It was cozy. I could see clouds rolling in, making a dark sky even more so. Out of the window, I could see specks of white falling from the sky. I was initially happy that I would be able to witness some snowfall before I had to leave. I sat by the window, watching white drift onto the ground, slowly forming a blanket of white over our little vacation. As the visions of white became dense, I felt my eyes grow tired, and before I knew it, I was waking up a few hours later. When they opened again, I was still coming back to my senses, as I watched the same snow fall through, with a different hue. It took a while to really come to, but when I did, I was surprised to realize it looked like ash was falling outside. Rising from my chair, I walked outside and stood on the porch, watching the snow falling beyond the porch's roof. Turning my head, I saw Adam also standing on his porch. As we watched the dark snow falling to the floor, tainting the white blanket, I asked him if he had seen anything like it before. He looked at me and shrugged. Slowly, I walked forward, and raising my hand out, I watched a small dot drift down and land on my finger. Pulling my hand back, I held the finger up and looked at the dark snow that had landed there. As I was observing it, I could feel a tingling sensation revving up on the affected area. The tingling quickly shifted into a burning that sent me back into the house. Rushing over to the sink, as the heat continued rising on my finger, I turned the faucet on. I let the warm water fall onto my finger for a minute before wiping the area with a washcloth. The color, though, didn't dissipate. It was as if I had dragged the finger through an old chimney. Furthermore, it seemed I had managed to spread the dark shade. Though the more I looked at it, the more the surface area seems to be spreading on its own. Then the flame I had felt grew into an agonizing cringe. I could see my hand starting to shake due to the pain. The color on my finger suddenly pulsated, and I felt several pinpricks shoot through the affected area. The entire tip of my finger had turned dark, and the color made its way from the first finger joint to the second, creeping towards my knuckle. I saw the finger curl, but I knew distinctly that it had not done so under my command. I tried to uncurl the finger, but it would not budge. It was almost as if my nerves had lost the ability to communicate anything other than pain. A pain that grew by the minute. I didn't know what to do, or how to stop the creeping dark snow from reaching the rest of my hand. Watching my finger uncurl itself made it feel alien. The feeling was nothing compared to seeing it curl once more in a direction it was never meant to articulate. My finger shuddered as it struggled curling back for a moment. Then a sharp snap of the bone allowed it to fold in half. My head got light seeing the blood drip out from where the bone was protruding. A bone that had been stained black. Small beads of red mixed in with inky blotches at the bottom of my skin. The color continued to crawl. I stared at the red drops of blood on the white porcelain sink. For a moment, the pain in my finger echoed the pain I went out there to forget. As the color made it to the second joint in my finger, my nerves howled again. The finger looked like a snail's shell when the second joint cracked and bent. The spiraling stick of flesh barely resembled my finger. I only knew it as mine because of the pain it brought. Gritting my teeth, I pulled the drawer under the sink open and placed my hand down so my fingers were resting over the edge of the sink. The spiral of flesh started twitching like an animal fresh out of the womb, trying to understand how their limbs worked. I could see the finger getting close to my knuckles, and I knew once it got there, it was going to be much more painful to stop. I rested the larger butcher's knife down just above the knuckle, and with a heavy breath, I pulled it into the air, and as I exhaled, brought it back down. The blade slammed into my finger, sending a shock into my body. Nothing compared to how horrifying I felt, seeing that I hadn't gotten through the bone. The finger was certainly cut. I could see my pale flesh leaking, but within the blood that came out were small, dark bits. These little flakes seemed to be moving within the blood. They spiked up and reached out of the red like tendrils. Fear filled me, and with more conviction, the butcher's blade was brought down on my finger again. My vision went blurry for a moment, but when the tears drifted from my eyes, I could see the vacancy where my finger had been. Blood was drifting from the wound, and I moved quickly. I had volunteered in a health clinic while I was studying a relevant field in college. The knowledge I barely ever used quickly came back to me in the moment of crisis. Running to the freezer, I grabbed an ice pack. Then, luckily, I found a first aid kit in the bathroom. Applying the ice to the wound felt like hell, but it would slow the bleeding as I dressed the wound with gauze. Standing in the bathroom, I clutched my hand as I watched the gauze shift its shade from the injury. I just kept praying that I wouldn't suddenly see the same ink returning. I pulled the gauze off and redressed the wound as I exited the bathroom and returned to the kitchen sink. Looking in the bowl, I could see the severed remains of my finger. My body must have been in shock. It didn't feel real, what I was seeing. My finger was darker than before, having been drained of its blood. Only the ink remained. It was horrifying. Watching the thing wriggle around, I could hear the fingernail tapping the porcelain. It became quickly apparent that the finger was moving towards me, trying to get to me. I flopped around like a landlocked fish, but I couldn't get high enough to clear the bowl. Stepping to the side, I watched as the thing altered its path to head straight towards me again. Small, inky tendrils trying to grasp the smooth surface. I backed away from the sink. I didn't want to interact with it in any way. Afraid trying to even reach over it would give it enough room to do something to me. Looking up above the sink was a small window. I could still see the dark snow falling. Some of it had clung to the window. It wasn't moving like the finger, though. It just melted away on the glass. I walked to my front door, stared at a red ball resting in the snow, covered by the dark snow. Very little white was left poking out on the ground. My heart pounded as I stepped closer to the door. Looking down, I confirmed none of the snow made it onto the porch. Cautiously, I pushed the door open and stepped onto the porch. The floorboards creaked underneath my steps as I brought myself further out of my house, trying to get a better look. Suddenly, remembering that Adam was also on his porch, I shifted my gaze over to his house and felt a dread wash over me. He was standing out in the snow, his chin tilted up high. Dark flakes drifted down and rested against his face, a face that was already littered with so much darkness. I started calling out to him, but my mouth lifted and covered my mouth. My survival instincts kicked in something fierce. I was just meant to observe. His body was motionless. So much so, I began to wonder if I had simply gone mad. If the pain I had felt in my finger was a fabrication that I had simply cut my finger off in hysteria. Adam's mouth opened, and the flecks drifted into the maw. More and more of his olive complexion vanished underneath the snow. He looked like a statue. The way the dark shade crafted a stark and solid figure in the snow. With a sudden jerk of his head, I was almost sent to the floor. All of his movements were quick and jerky, like something didn't know how to pilot him with any subtlety. It was either all gas or all brakes. His head would twist left and right. Every so often I caught a look of his eyes. They were shifting back and forth so fast I could imagine the headache such a thing would give me. An arm came up from his side and fidgeted the same way. His skin was covered in ash. Nothing left of his original skin tones remained. Just the ash. With a quick jerk, his eyes looked over at me. I remembered how the finger in the sink tried to get at me, and I felt my heart drop. As I started backing up to my doorway, I could see his body beginning to ignore intended articulation, just as my finger had. It sounded like someone was breaking tree branches right next to my head. Each time I saw an arm pop at the elbow and twist around, I felt my stomach churning. It took a moment for him to start really moving towards me, like the snow hadn't affected his legs initially. When he did, though, I saw the fabric of his jeans manipulated near the knee. He had gotten a little shorter, too. His knees must have popped like his arms, causing the bones to hang like strings holding him up. The thing that I once called Adam made one step after another towards me as his whole body jittered. Quick, unnerving moments, like a body on fire. Fingers twitching like worms. Jaw constantly shifted, causing teeth to clack against each other. His head looked like flies were landing on it, rapid motions trying to get the intruders to leave him alone. It was like someone had sped up the Thriller dance and set it on loop. There was no bits of Adam left, no agency in his own body. As he approached, and as I retreated, the light from my porch landed on him. The heat from it seemed to call to it. I could see small black lines like goopy hair reaching off from the darkness. My hand was on the door handle, ready to retreat inside and barricade myself. I wanted to retreat from the visage of Adam. Those tendrils must have been moving around in his throat. God, I hope that's why he was groaning like that. I hope he died early on. I can't imagine feeling my bones crack and bend like that. As I was pulling the door open, though, I heard a quaint laughter, innocent and childlike. Looking towards the noise, I first saw the red ball lying in the yard. My eyes followed the path. There he was. M just stood in the front door. His silhouette was somehow ominous. I couldn't see Ellis from the doorway, and I could see the glee on Emery's face. I knew what was about to happen. Time was moving slowly. I had never experienced that feeling before. When adrenaline kicks into overdrive, it's like the world stops spinning. Just long enough. Despite my verbal attempt to stop the boy, he started leaving the confines of the cabin. All he saw was snow to play in, and his ball out in the middle of it. My door was open. I quickly reached inside, feeling the velvet on my jacket. I pulled it loose from the hook. Adam was closer, but not close enough to grab me. As I rushed by him, I could see fingers twisted and cracked like bramble reaching out for me, but failing to connect. Holding the jacket over my head, shielding me as best as I could, feet trembled through the snow as I bolted towards M, his small fingers reaching forward. I felt my feet nearly fall from under me, as loose snow kicked up. Nearly toppling over, I was able to snatch M up. With the kid in my arms, I quickly entered Ellie's cabin, knowing that Adam would still be coming towards me. I nearly crushed the child, falling over. Ellis rounded the corner, asking what all the commotion was about. I must have looked insane. Asking her to check the child for any spots where snow had gotten on him, I think she saw the panic I was in. She took M and started looking over him, asking what it would look like. When I described what I had seen to her, she did a double take at me. She told me that my face had a dark spot on it. A shiver ran through my body as I bolted to her bathroom to look in the mirror. And sure enough, there was a dark patch of snow on my cheek, one that was growing larger by the moment. Without time to think, I hurried into her kitchen, all the cabins looking the same. I knew exactly where the silverware was. Pulling the drawer open, I got the sharpest-looking knife I could and ran into the bathroom with it, ignoring Ellie's cries for an explanation. Staring into the mirror, I was repulsed at seeing the spot had already grown larger. Bringing the knife up to my face, I felt that the adrenaline rushing through me before had subdued. A fear of pain caused my hand to shake while looking at the skin I would need to gorge out. Then I thought of Adam, mindless and wandering, probably stepping up the porch as I stood there trying to calm myself. So, the tip of the knife pressed in right below my cheekbone. I must have been screaming. I don't remember it, though. The pain of dragging the tip of that knife across my face, pressing deeper into my skin, was blinding. I traced the outline of the dark spot and pressed in deep to make sure I got it all. So deep that I occasionally felt the tip of the knife prodding the side of my tongue. In the way that adrenaline seemed to slow down time, the pain made it feel like I was in that bathroom for hours. Tears rolled down my cheek. The only reason I knew about them was feeling the salt content hitting the ever-increasing wound. One drag after another, trying to beat the clock, I pulled the knife in and out of my cheek. The worst was angling the knife to try and slice under the tissue to separate the muscle tissue. There was a constant ringing in my ears and a heat behind my eyes. Ellie's sink resembled a crime scene by the time I was done, and I could feel my body starting to get light as the slab of my flesh dropped into the sink. By the time it hit the sink, you would have mistaken it for a lump of charcoal. That is, until it started to slither around in the bowl. The weird oblong shape moving across the sink like a centipede carried by hundreds of dark, short limbs. Quickly reaching for the first aid kit behind the mirror, I started retreating from the bathroom. I had figured that the things were coming towards me because of the heat I was giving off, so before exiting the bathroom, I popped the window open. I hoped it would be enough to slow the thing down to confuse it. Popping the kit open, I dropped to my knees. My body felt so heavy, and I was too weak to fight it. Fingers failed time and time again to get a good grip of the medical supplies. My vision started to wane, and I fell forward. My face fell to the carpet where I laid, feeling tired and empty. The blood from the open wound on my face started to stain the carpet around me. I could see hues of crimson eating away at the pure white. The sounds at the front door grew louder and louder. I thought maybe I could just lie there, telling myself that I had fought pretty hard. As my vision started to fail, the cabin looked so much like home. Moving my body with labored effort, I could see the cabin's front door as Adam's body slammed against it. The wood shook and seemed to send out a pulse that caused the world to wobble about. I swear I could see him leaving. I could see him walking out of the apartments of my life like it was just another day, leaving me all alone on the floor. Pushing my fingers forward through the forest of carpet fibers, I could see Ellis walking to the front door. Weak breath couldn't reach her, telling her to get away. Useless. That door was going to come down any moment. Any one of those impacts would be enough. Reaching further, my fingers landed on a bottle of rubbing alcohol. Why? Why did it have to be rubbing alcohol? With the bottle of clear disinfectant in my hand, I rolled my body. I couldn't just lay on the carpet forever. I couldn't stay the person I was. I knew I had to get up. Twisting the cap of the bottle off, the small white piece of plastic slapped against my face. I tipped the bottle slowly, took a deep breath, and let the liquid pour down onto my face. The alcohol drenched the patch of my face that was devoid of skin. I swear, for a moment I heard circus music, like I was taken somewhere else. The burning, a circus on fire. My back arched, toes curled, and I let out a howl that I'm still not confident was my own. An animal. I was an animal. I could see Ellis turning to me. Shock on her face as my body trembled from the pain. Such piercing fire rummaging my body. Bunched fingers pounded the floorboards. I used the shrill of energy to pull myself up to my feet. I was running on empty fumes, small sparks that I gathered. She rushed over, my hand clutching the gauze and cotton. She quickly started dressing the wound as I was barely able to get my arms up. I heard her voice muffled, telling M to get me some water. All the while, the banging at the door continued. Then, the windows. I could see their faces pressed against the glass. The couple, the girl, they were all outside, banging on windows and smashing away at the wooden cabin. If I had the mental energy to spare, I would have felt helpless. Instead, I asked Ellis if she had any more alcohol. She nodded, telling me that I shouldn't be drinking it, though. Shaking my head, I pointed towards the lighter on her countertop, the one next to a half-empty pack of cigarettes. She gave me a bottle of vodka, and I worked quickly, shoving fabric into the opening, making sure to get it deep enough to touch the drink. I was starting to feel the heaviness fade, as my body desperately fought to heal. Telling the two to go hide, I stumbled over to the front door. With my fingers on the handle, I could feel the thing slam against the door. My fingers rattled as I tried to keep my grip. I waited for it to slam once more. When it did, I swung the door open. Using the momentum the thing had gotten from bouncing against the door, I shot my foot forward. It was weak, but enough to send Adam tumbling backwards. His body was nothing like before. It was as if his frame was melting. His limbs were almost unrecognizable. Bones had cracked, and arms and legs no longer had structure. The thing was a mass of black wires tugging at ripping skin soaked in oil. It fell backwards like a drunk, flailing noodle limbs and rolling its head around, no vertebrae to speak of. The kick, however, also sent me to the floor. I kept a tight grip on the bottle and the lighter, though, and so I placed a flame under the fabric and watched it light. A few breaths to steel myself, and I let the bottle fly. It went just far enough, smashing against the wooden porch across from me. My cabin. The fire started immediately, the alcohol overcoming the rag on impact. Using my foot, I quickly kicked the door shut and backed away. Ellis and M ran over to me as my head got light. I laid back, imagining all my stuff in the cabin going up in flames. Ellis told me the things stopped hitting the house and were drawn to the burning cabin. It worked, but I knew eventually that the cabin was going to burn out. The thought horrified me, but I couldn't keep my eyes open any longer. And I guess I just drifted off. It was a pounding at the door that woke me. I don't know how long I was out, but I felt fear spike within me, shredding my lungs. The banging got louder and louder. I told Ellis to get me a knife, but as she started to move, the door finally gave way and swung open. I immediately saw the dark figure standing in the doorway, but it was just a person. Someone in a dark padded suit. They looked ready to try and stifle a riot, their face hidden behind a dark mask, not one bit of their skin exposed. He was talking on the radio, telling someone that he found three more. He was holding on to what I recognized as a flamethrower. The massive silver propane tank, the lit flame ready to release any moment. Even more so, I could see the lights behind him. Streams of fire reaching out and torching the snow-infected creatures. Two people rushed in behind the one reporting. They were wearing thinner armor. It resembled hazmat suits as opposed to battle-ready gear. They barely talked to us. Instead, looking us over, presumably for dark spots. One of them took a good, hard look at my wounds before applying more care than I had. They then escorted us out. Driving a van right up to the porch, we were able to climb inside without being exposed to the snow. I watched the town get smaller behind us as the black snow started becoming less and less prevalent the further we went. Eventually, there wasn't a trace of it left. The ride was silent other than Em's occasional questions or crying. Me and Ellis exchanged one last glance as we were led in different directions. I don't know what happens to them after that. Hopefully they're safe, like me. I was questioned. They asked me what I had seen and how I was feeling. I told them everything, that I felt like I was still alive. That's all that mattered. I didn't even know about what happened or who came to save us. They explained it was some abnormal parasite that was pulled into the clouds during evaporation. It felt like a lie, though. A cute, simple answer. Any questions I had pressing the matter were stonewalled. A lot of their words amounted to, "You're lucky you're allowed to leave." I did see they had patches on them that said AECB. But I don't know anything more than that. I haven't been able to find anything online about them. That's something odd about things today. They just let me go. There are a million more bizarre stories out there. No one is just going to start believing all of them. You don't need to shut people up when they sound like they're out of their minds, I guess. But I have more clarity now than I ever have. My apartment is empty now. I've gotten a new place. Somewhere cold. Somewhere I can watch the snow fall. Somewhere I can truly rebuild and find out who I really am.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.